This week's podcast brought to you by the Knuckle Floater.
The Knuckle Floater was my dad's patented walnut-crushing, soul-crushing handshake that would bring me or anybody to their knees. And I just want to greet our listeners today with the Knuckle Floater.
Saying says no pain, no gain, and we found that to be fact. The road might twist and turn a bit, but we all arrive intact. Mr. Mom and Mrs. Dad having each other's back. Day by day, just to keep it sane, who's the ball and who's the chain? It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane.
It's the end of April. Is today the last day of April? 30 days in April? That sounds right, right?
Yes.
And both of us have been in full spring cleaning mode. This past weekend when I was up in New Hampshire with our son at a basketball tournament, you just went to town on the garage, cleaning and throwing stuff away, and that's been glorious. And then I spent time the other day in our closet, 4 trash bags full of clothes that were donated.
Whose clothes?
My clothes. And there's more to go, too. Spent a lot of time this morning in the basement trying to clean up down here, but I'm in complete let's get rid of it mode. And then I was proud of myself and you last night. You were had your laptop out, and I glanced over, and every little centimeter of space on your laptop was covered by a document.
On the desktop screen.
On your screen, yes. And I suggested, why don't you like put those in folders? And you did. And
now my screen is covered in folders.
That's not what would you say now? Like a quarter of your screen is covered versus every tiny piece of your screen before?
But before I knew where to find stuff.
I know, but how do you live that way? So anyway, it made me feel better, even if it didn't help you at all, that you cleaned up your screen. But I think we're both kind of in organized clean mode right now.
One of the things, the big reason that I took to spring cleaning, and I think some people know this now, is that my dad passed away a few weeks ago and left nothing for his children to rummage through to clean up after. He was developed a lifelong habit of his high school friends had told me he was a slob up until he went into the army, and then he came out of the army a total neat freak, super organized, as you know.
Yeah.
And you know, people always say don't leave all this stuff for your kids to have to deal with when you die, and he certainly didn't.
I mean, he smartly, but he lived that way too. He didn't leave stuff for him to have to deal with. Even, you know, sometimes when we would stay with him and his closet, like you would walk between his bedroom and his closet to get to the bathroom. And he would always insist that we stay in his bedroom when we came to visit. And the closet, it was just like, you know, what? 10 pairs of
khakis
that all fit him, just lined up in a row. And then
he owned one pair of jeans in his life, and that was for about a day. He always proudly boasted that he never owned a pair of what he called overalls, anything made of denim. And then we were at a Notre Dame football game one weekend in the 90s, and there was just a torrential downpour, and he didn't have any dry pants. And we went to some Target-like place, and he got a pair of, this was great comic lore in the family for years, a pair of Big Yanks. That was the brand of jean, Big Yank, and he wore the Big Yanks during the game and never again.
I mean, your dad, I don't think I ever saw him in anything other than khaki type of pants or shorts, always with a belt, golf shirt tucked in. Or if he was in a blazer or a tie for some reason.
I clean mean,
he
shaven.
Was always clean shaven. Just impeccably dressed and groomed and all of that.
I was fortunate to get to fly down to Florida and see him in the last couple of days before he passed away. And it was first time, honestly, in my memory that I had seen him with a couple days of stubble. The stubble was jet black, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. And then if he would see me unshaven, which was maybe more often than not, although I was conscious when I went to see him that I was going to get grief for it. Somebody stood too far from their razor this morning. And so he would go through that. But anyway, giving each other, busting each other's chops was a form of communication in our family, as you know.
Right.
Although never, he didn't really bust your chops ever, did he?
Well, we had the one bet, the one year, years ago, a UConn-Tennessee game, because he played how many years at Tennessee?
Two.
He started at
He played football at Purdue, and then he transferred to Tennessee. When I say transferred, he walked out of practice. He and two other guys walked out of practice one day as sophomores and pretty much walked to Tennessee, my dad became a football player at Tennessee then.
And we had a bet on a women's basketball game. I think it was on a women's game, and UConn won, and he was supposed to at Christmas, when everyone got together, the loser of the bet had to sing the other's fight song.
I think he was secretly hoping that Tennessee lost.
And then, well, they did lose, and then he stood up in front of the family and sang the fight song, but with his own words.
Yes.
And it sounded, it was like to the tune of the UConn fight song.
He had studied it online or something.
Well, it's so great because he clearly put time and thought into listening to the song so he could get the cadence and the rhythm and whatever.
Completely.
And then just completely changed the words. And it was very, very sweet.
But the first time he met you under my brother Jim was saying at my dad's memorial last week how did she think that you were, that this was the weirdest thing ever? I was visiting him in the Twin Cities.
Because you were living in New York City. Playing for the New York Liberty.
Living in New York. And
we weren't dating yet.
That's what I'm told.
Yeah, we were just friends.
And, but I was visiting him in the Twin Cities and staying with him. And you told me that the Liberty were playing at the Lynx.
Yeah, we were on a road trip, and we were playing at Minnesota, and you were in Minnesota, and
so I asked Dad if he wanted to go, and I can't remember if he was like, you know, questioned if I had ulterior motives or whatever, but anyway, we went. I drove his Cadillac, I assume.
Yeah.
Parked in the
well, one of you drove his Cadillac.
Labyrinthian garages across from Target Field and Target Center. And after the game, we were going to go get something to eat, and you joined us. We went to the parking garage, right?
Well, first we went right across the street and had something to eat at sort of a dive Irish bar.
Oh, Donahue's.
Where I think I ordered salmon.
It's just an Irish place. Yeah.
And somebody was like, why would you order salmon at an Irish pub? Anyway, and then you offered to give me a ride back to the team hotel.
Yeah, I definitely was driving.
Because this is before Ubers and all of that stuff.
I was definitely driving because I couldn't find my way out of that parking garage. It was empty by that point after we'd eaten.
Yes, so I think you were driving, offered your father and you offered me the front seat, and then your dad was in the back seat.
He was in the back seat. He was exactly like Peter Brady in the back seat on Greg's date with the frog and the pizza.
Well, but
old croaker,
you could not find your way out of the parking garage. And was this the retelling of the story later, or did your father actually at one point say serenity now?
He said from the back, he was literally backseat driving, trying to get me out of the garage. I couldn't find my way out. And I probably snapped at him, and he said, serenity now.
Yeah.
But for your benefit, because
of course,
he wouldn't have said that if it was just the two of us.
If I wasn't in the car, he would have snapped right back, I'm sure.
But at the end of this night, then we dropped you.
You dropped me off at the hotel.
And then as we, and I don't know if my dad knew what was going on, why one of the players in the game got a ride with us after the game to dinner and then to the hotel. But anyway, when we dropped you and we were going back to get on Highway 100 or whatever it is to go back to his place, and before passing out, I think, in the shotgun seat because he was tired, he said, "Ah, she seems like a neat gal."
Which was the highest compliment.
No, the highest compliment. Neat and swell were the two highest highest adjectives applied to seldom a member of our nuclear family.
Yes.
But anyway, he was a neat guy, a swell guy, and I mean, we could do 100 hours of conversation, stories about him, all of them true, all of them, he didn't listen to this podcast, needless to say, but, and he did not, I mean, he didn't want a eulogy, he didn't want an obituary, he said that the less you say, the better, in terms of the obituary. He once came back from a funeral 15 years ago and said to me, funeral is way too long. And he said to me, if you ever think of giving me a eulogy, don't. And if you insist, be short, be brief. And so
you did do the eulogy.
I did.
And you were brief, I thought I honored
that. I was not going to go over roughly 1,000 words because I knew that he would come back and strike me down if I did. A friend of mine said, his own father said something similar and said, remember, the eulogy is not about you delivering it. But in my dad's case, he also didn't want it about him. So when, right. whenever I wrote about him, and I did fairly often, I mean, and certainly in the couple of books, he did not enjoy that. But he always let me write about him because it helped me and not him. In fact, in Stingray Afternoons, I said, there's a lot of stuff in there that about you, and I want you to read it before I send it off. He said, no, send it off. I'll read it when it comes out. I said, well, when it comes out, you can't change it. And so that's fine. And so then he just, you know, I got uncomfortable with being the center of attention or, you know, then kind of lived with that. And one of my favorite stories, and I have the note upstairs somewhere because he gave it to me. Every year he would go to this Jesuit retreat in DeMontreville in Wisconsin every June, 4 days. He'd check in on Thursday, check out on Sunday. And when he was checking in, and it's silence from arrival to departure.
Every year he would say, this is the weekend of my retreat, so there's going to be no communication.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to speak, right? When they were on the
right.
retreat.
Right. Yeah. One of the years that he was coming, returning from it is when the bridge, the 35W bridge over the Mississippi collapsed. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, this, he's coming back from Wisconsin now. But one year, somebody passed him a note that said, you know, are you the Don Russian, the dad from Stingray Afternoons? And I know he got that a lot. Never sort of in a silent exchange like that. That was sort of the most absurd example of it. But he could just kind of sigh inaudibly and wearily nod his head. Yes, I think he got a kick out of it in some ways because he was always so proud of all of his kids and all of his grandkids. And I think over the years, accepted that it was because so many people told him that it was a flattering portrait of him, you know?
Right.
But I don't think it was, you know, of course it wasn't. He didn't see himself the way his kids see themselves, just as we don't see ourselves the way our kids see us, right. You know? I mean, and thank God we don't see ourselves that way because right. To our kids, I am just, you know, a complete buffoon.
Right.
100%. And I'm willing to concede I'm 96% buffoon.
Well, this morning I'm driving, about to leave the house to drive our youngest to school. And I had worked out and hadn't yet showered. And I was in a ridiculous outfit, including like tall socks and furry Crocs. And
tall socks and furry Crocs. Yes. Denny has a title for the podcast.
And our 13-year-old just looked and said, you are not getting out of the car. And I said, unless one of your teachers wants me to get out of the car. And I mean, there's no chance I would get out of the car. I understood that I looked absurd. And I said, well, I hope we don't break down. And the car doesn't break down. And she said, if it breaks down, I hope it happens after you drop me at school. but yes, we don't see ourselves the way
we couldn't go on.
No, we couldn't.
Yeah, so my dad started going to that retreat after my mom died in 1991. And he, I mean, not only did he never remarry, he never, you know, he never entertained the notion of seeing another woman in that, in those 32 and a half years. And your dad and I played nine holes of golf the other day, and he told me that after your mom passed away and my dad came out for the few days surrounding the funeral, that your dad's that my dad went to your dad's condo to commiserate, and your dad said, I'll never forget the advice that he gave me, which was, beware of women with casseroles. Which, I mean, I'm hearing so many stories about my dad that I had never heard before, and I heard and or lived through a million of them, and you know, that's, these stories will sustain us for, you know, the rest of my life, but they've also made the past month, easier, enriching, and celebratory in so many ways. And a neighbor of ours, when I was, you know, in grade school, great friend of the family's, sent an email with a few other stories that I had never heard. One of which was, my mother, we lived across the street. My mother was in a terry cloth bathrobe, a favorite ratty bathrobe of hers, according to our neighbor. And, you know, all five of us kids were little at that point. And it was a snowstorm in January, a blizzard. I think it was a rare day that school, there was a snow day in Minnesota. But my mom had to go out and to the drugstore and get a prescription for one of us. One or more of us was sick. And while our neighbor was visiting, who related this story, was visiting, the phone rang, and it was my dad calling from Las Vegas, where he was on business. It was, you know, 85 and sunny in Las Vegas. He was sitting poolside, and he told my mom that all of the ladies walking around the pool, you know, in their bikinis or whatever in Las Vegas, were wearing these certain style of sandal with some kind of gold braiding or something on them, and you know, would she like a pair of those? She should, you know, think about getting a pair. And as he was saying this, my mom hung up the phone on him, which, as she should have,
of course.
So, I mean, clearly, in my case, the apple fell far from the tree there, but and that's so consistent with, I mean, my dad, you know, in real life, super thoughtful guy, had no interest in any stuff for himself, but was very interested in, you know, would my mom like this, would she like that? And when she told him once that, well, she didn't tell him, she would often go to the, when like health clubs became a thing in the 70s and opened in the Twin Cities, she would go to, you know, drive across town to ride the exercise bike or walk the treadmill at one of the health clubs. And when my dad, you know, learned of this, he bought her a treadmill, put it in the basement. Look, now you never have to, you don't have to drive all the way across town to use a treadmill, which of course was the entire point of using the treadmill, was driving across town, seeing other human beings, getting out of the house. So she very pointedly never used that thing except to, as a coat rack.
Whenever we would visit your dad in warm weather months, Saturday evening, go to Saturday mass. And then afterwards, I can just, you know, a couple times when we went with him, he would get flowers and go out to the cemetery. And as part of the marker at the grave, there was a vase.
It's like flush with the ground.
Yeah. And he would, you know, fill it with water, put the flowers in. And
he'd clean off the marker always.
Yeah,
he'd always look at his name next to her name on the marker.
And anyway, I just remember always feeling how just like sweet and it was that, you know, she had his heart and no other woman ever would.
Yeah. And you know, I told this, I think I mentioned it in one of the books, but, you know, she had her hands full with five kids, mom did, and she was no pushover. She was, she held down the fort for a couple of weeks at a time when he would be in Japan or in Europe or something. And, when she heard him like coming up the driveway in whatever car he had at the time, a Buick Regal, I kind of think of permanently the red Buick Regal with the white Landau roof with a little like oval window in the back. Do you remember? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Buick Regal. It was She would go to the little vanity in the downstairs bathroom next to the kitchen, and she had like a lipstick in there, and she'd like, I don't know if it was, she was reapplying the lipstick or you know, just and then checking herself in the mirror before he would come home. You know, and it was very much like a 1950s sitcom in that way, where he'd come in with a briefcase and wore a jacket and tie every day for 37 years. I remember him telling me once he went to Japan a lot, Taiwan. He was on his way back from some Asian trip, and they stopped in Guam. You know, here's a place we could sell some Scotch brand recording tape at the military PX there, and the local guy from Guam picking him up at the hotel to take him wherever they needed to go, and he was in, you know, like a short sleeve shirt, and Dad was in his suit and tie, and Dad was like, what are you doing? You know, conduct business and in this bowling shirt or whatever. And the guy was like, what are you doing? It's 105 in Guam with, you know, a dew point of 85. So, but that's just how he was. And, you know, I love every bit of that.
You posted something very nice on your Instagram. We'll also post it on the Ball and Chain Instagram. It was a couple pictures of your dad and then something that you had written. But I think that's Ball and Chain Pod on Instagram. We'll post it, repost it there.
Anyway, Dad was a guy who grew up not knowing his own father. He met him twice, the second time and last time as a 12-year-old. He had no real example of how to be one himself, and he became really the best father and grandfather, husband anybody could ask for. 5 kids, 15 grandkids, his five kids and their 5 spouses and all the grandkids. So 26 of us total, including him. He took us all to South Africa for his 80th birthday. He'd planned it for 2 years, cost him a fortune. But as I say, he had no interest, none in things. And of course, like anybody, he wanted to be comfortable, although strangely not during medical procedures. He always liked to decline anesthesia wherever medical ethics allowed. He was almost impervious to physical pain, which served him well in football. But he had great interest in, you know, is are you comfortable? You know, I want you to be comfortable. And I joked during the eulogy, he would be like, I want you to be comfortable, but in exactly the same way that I'm comfortable. You know, so, you know, wouldn't you be more comfortable in a sweater? Because he's cold, surely you must be cold. He would always, when I would go visit, you don't want a glass of orange juice, you know? No, I don't drink orange. You don't drink orange juice. No, it gives me acid reflux. It gives you what? What even is that? Is that a thing? And, you know, he was a depression baby, as he always said, born in 1934. He was just shy of his 90th birthday. June 3rd will be his 90th birthday. And so he would, you know, when I was a kid growing up, it was fascinating to us because he would eat the orange, but he would also eat the peel. He would eat the potato, and then he'd cut up the potato skin and eat that. He would eat apples. There'd just be, you know, 10 seeds in a stem. You know, anytime, you know, we would have anything that had a bone, chicken, pork chop. Pork chops were his favorite. He, you know, it would just be clean. You're not going to finish your chicken wing. I have finished it. There's nothing. Look at all that good stuff on it. And he would just clean it up. So, you know, I mentioned in the thing that I posted that when he got last rites, he struggled to get up to tip the priest, and it was almost as if he was tipping the god's maitre d', like, show me to a nice table. So I have no doubt that he was shown to a nice table and sat down to a pork chop and an Arnold Palmer. And when the waitress disappeared for too long, he said she was in the federal waitress protection program, and that if my mother was there with him, then that is the definition of heaven for him. So we all miss him. But as I say, we have the comfort of a million stories to sustain us over the coming years. All right, shall we we've got some viewer mail. Shall we get to it?
Yes, let's get to viewer mail.
Big bad hook, throw our lure, reel us in with your viewer mail.
All right, our first viewer mail comes from one of our myriad Ralphs.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon, Ralph.
Ralph 1 writes, "Hi, Restiva. This Ralph was appointed most esteemed senior theoretical bubbleologist for the podcast some years ago. You may not remember that, but I do. I am loath to give up the position. Ironically, my dad was named Edward, and he too was a psychologist who consulted a lot for industries. My dad's middle name was Edward."
Yes.
"I can recommend the Destroyer Escort Historical Museum for something to do in Albany." Rebecca. Rebecca. The Destroyer Escort Historical Museum.
Okay. I'm kind of lucky because now that Charles Barkley's gone in on Galveston, I think everyone's...
Charles Barkley has been talking about how the beach in Galveston is going not to his standard.
Anyway, I think most have forgotten about me in Albany, but I have not, and I would love to go explore.
And Ralph writes, "Unfortunately, it was not open during the regionals. It is well worth a return trip." We'll make a return trip.
We will. Albany's what, 90 minutes from here? Very close.
Very close. And with so many things to do, we will be going there soon.
Yes.
I'm serious. "The supermarket I shop at has one half of one aisle for all cereals. Maybe that's why I did not find any Rookie O's there. I am sure
one half of one aisle? Wow.
I am sure Stewie will be disappointed to hear that." Cereal, our youngest this morning, we had what looked like five or six boxes of cereal in the pantry, but all of them were down to the dregs. So we ended up with almost nothing left. We do have half a box of Caitlin Clark cereal, I think, still in the cabinet, in the pantry. Somebody's got dibs on that empty box, I think, when it's done. But our eighth grader asked this morning, "Can you get Reese's Puffs cereal?" And I said, "What? What is that?" She said, "Is the one that looks like rabbit poop, bunny poop?" I think is what she said. I said, "Oh, that certainly sounds appetizing."
Yes.
Ralph writes, "Chris Daly changed a rule. You mean she bends with the times? I did not think that was possible." What rule did she change? Oh,
pantyhose.
That's right.
Used to insist on pantyhose, on players wearing them, and then eventually realized that no one who is that a college age wears pantyhose.
"Nylon stockings," writes Ralph, "were very popular back in the mid-70s when I worked at a department store, but they were losing share to pantyhose." That was back when Joe Namath was... wearing.
Mid-70s, right? Yeah.
"I'm glad to hear that Rose is cleared for sports." Ralph in Connecticut. Thank you, Ralph. Our next viewer mail, Rebecca, comes from Ralph in Colorado.
Say a different Ralph?
Ralph. "This is Ralph, your resident party bus driver, listening to you talk about the excessive amount of listeners with my name. Anyways, I was driving for a second grade birthday party." Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine that bus?
Oh my gosh. This is before or after cake. "Anyways, I was driving for a second grade birthday party, and when the kids were boarding the bus, I introduced myself. One little girl said, 'Ralph, is that even a real name?'" Oh, that's great. "Me, yep, it's a regular name that doesn't always mean barfing. The kids couldn't stop laughing, which made for a successful day. Thank you for always supporting the Ralph Nation and for all the laughs. Ralph, the party bus driver in Colorado.
A name that came up the other day was Roger, which was my grandfather's name, my mom's dad's name. And I was like, you don't see any young Rogers. You see young Ralphs?
That's so strange because there was always Buck Rogers in the 21st century. You would think there would be 21st century Rogers.
Bucks either. Buck must have been short for something, right?
Well, I mean, I thinking of the Doors song right now. She's a 21st century Ralph. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
They had a song, 21st century Fox. 20th century Fox, I guess it was. Name, you know, a play on the film
right,
studio.
Right, yeah.
Thank you, Ralph. Great. I mean, just what an experience. Party bus driver for a second grade birthday party. Mm. Fantastic. That's when they were boarding. Imagine when they got up, hopped up on the birthday cake. Susie writes in our next viewer mail, as a longtime UConn women's basketball fan, I always wondered why the WNBA did not take a page from the college media handbook. I started watching UConn when every game except the rare nationally televised one was aired on CPTV, Connecticut Public Television, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
That allowed me to be very familiar and invested with my team. It helped that one of the announcers was a former Husky and therefore also invested in the team.
Megan.
Mm-hmm. I was very excited when the WNBA was created, but lost some interest because I was able to emotionally invest in my local team, either the Sun or Liberty. Because of lack of consistent coverage. The weekly coverage was good, but it wasn't enough to get people to attend and follow their local teams. I'm not sure if this was true in other markets. I was happier to watch a Houston Comets game since I knew of most of the players. I love that ESPN has been expanding their coverage, but wonder if the team should be doing some grassroots negotiating with one of their local stations. As a Yankee fan, I would not just watch the game of the week, but took pleasure in watching most games with my familiar and knowledgeable and biased announcers. Your thoughts?
I have a couple of thoughts, but number one is WNBA League Pass is $34.99 for the entire season, and you can watch every game on WNBA League Pass for the most part. There might be a couple nationally televised games that you can't access there, but if you want to watch all of the Connecticut games or all of the Minnesota games or whichever team, League Pass, I get it every year. It's definitely worth it. It's interesting because I had this conversation with someone of a WNBA person for a team a number of years ago, and I told them, you know, when I was at UConn and games started being broadcast on CPTV, that's when the team kind of really, really got popular. And the person who was with the team, their thing was, yeah, but if we put them on TV, then people won't come to the game. I'm like, and I said, no, that's not really how it worked, at least with us. People saw the team, followed the team on TV, then as a result, knew the players and would purchase tickets and come to the games. But this year, actually the last couple of years, games have been very accessible. I think every one of the Connecticut Suns games, for example, were broadcast home and away with their announcers this past year, even if they weren't on national TV. But I highly, highly recommend looking at or into the WNBA app because for an entire season, you can watch every single game. And it, like I said, it's only $35.
I mean, what I miss, and I know The Athletic, I think they did it for a while and then I think abandoned beat writing for a lot of teams and sports.
Yeah.
I miss daily beat coverage of, particularly during baseball season, you know? I like reading the New York Times and reading, it was probably in a too small minority here, but in reading about last night, whether the highlights had already been, you know, disseminated and I'd seen the game or not seen the game. I liked reading about, you know, the game story from the previous night's game and then, you know, the notes from the clubhouse and all that kind of stuff.
And as evil as Twitter/X is, there are a ton of people who write about different WNBA teams. And if you follow them on there, they generally link to their coverage. And some of it might be behind a paywall if it's for a newspaper, but much of it is free and easily accessible if you can just kind of search out the people that you should be following in order to follow your team.
One further question, writes Susie. Since you brought up CD and her fashion rules on the last episode, I was wondering if the no visible tattoos rule was still in effect. I would think it would be a problem now that tattoos are so common. If it is in effect, does it interfere with recruiting, or did it when it was in effect? I'll hang up and listen. But before she hangs up and listens, a huge shout out to the team of Lobo, Ruco, and Roe for great coverage of the tournament. You all made it more interesting and exciting to watch. Not that it could get any more interesting and exciting. So thanks to the team.
You know, and I need to ask Chris Daly, because she used to have the rule that if you had a tattoo, you had to cover it, the no visible tattoo rule. But that was back when somebody might have a tattoo somewhere on their leg or on their arm, where I forget that the one guard, she would always put a Band-Aid on her shoulder because that's where her tattoo was. This was probably 10 or 15 years ago. I haven't asked CD that. Like, I think Nico Mule or someone on this current team had a little tattoo maybe like behind their ear or somewhere, and you could see it, but it was small enough that it wasn't kind of in your face. But it would be, I would imagine, really hard to have that rule now when so many young people have big tattoos on parts of their body where you can't cover it all.
It would also be an interesting dilemma if they had a prized recruit who tattooed stockings onto their legs.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you, Susie. Dear Stephen, Rebecca writes, Steve, our attending Northern Suburbs correspondent in the Twin Cities. It's been a while since I wrote, during which time life kept getting in the way of tuning into the BNC pod or anything else for that matter. Between building up a new business and caring for my mother, there wasn't much time left in the day to tune in. No need to apologize,
yes,
Steve.
I mean, we understand.
There are millions of reasons not to listen to the Ball and Chain podcast.
No need to enumerate all of them.
No, but I'm grateful that you enumerated two of them. Nonetheless, a couple of weeks ago, I decided I needed to get caught up, spurred on by my inability to balance the egg carton with only three eggs in it, a dilemma which made me realize that I've missed my weekly check-in with the Russian Lobo family and all of the BNC contributors. Plus, I figured I needed to get back on Team Steve, despite there being a veritable plethora. What a great word, Rebecca. Plethora.
It really is.
A plethora of things on which to comment. I will, in true BNC fashion, keep it short with a few bullet points. Are you ready, Rebecca?
I'm ready.
As with virtually everyone, I mourn the loss of Dr. Siegel. Despite my affinity for auto racing, Formula One was a mystery to me until his enthusiasm spurred me to watch the Netflix series and start paying attention to the teams. His sounded like a white life well-lived and well-loved, something to which we should all aspire. Absolutely, Steve. And thank you for bringing up Dr. Siegel. I was thinking of him this past week. I had to write a eulogy for Dad as well. And that exercise, one healthy part of that exercise is, you know, we have talked about my eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yes.
I wanted you to be brutally honest in it. Probably not so much now. But it does give you a reason to think about how you would like to be, you know, eulogized.
Remembered,
yourself.
Yeah.
So, and therefore spur you on to change your ways while you still can.
If they need
when
changing.
I say you, I mean me.
You're right.
Rebecca, your calls and insight during the NCAA women's tournament were terrific. I happened to be at my favorite dive bar in Minneapolis during the Big Ten women's tournament, and the number of young girls wearing number 22 jerseys was incredible. My mom, we had the same experience in Albany.
Yes.
My mom and I watched nearly all the games. Then during the Women's Elite Eight, Final Four, and Championship games, we made it must-see television. At 86, my mother grew up playing half-court intramural games where they could only take two steps before passing, and she and I both were overwhelmed by the intensity, speed, and shot-making skill of the young women that we watched. I've become a fan and have tickets already for several upcoming Lynx games with my daughter.
Oh, awesome.
That's great. And we've talked about this, I don't think on the podcast, but just how ridiculous, you know. And I think you have a book upstairs about the All-American
redheads yeah.
And you know, just like you can only take two steps before passing, or you can't cross half court. You know, some of these crazy rules. I mean, when a lady says to you in the line to the supermarket, "You said Caitlin Clark isn't the GOAT." Caitlin Clark is incredible, but how do we know how many GOATs there may have been? You know, if women, girls, had been allowed to take multiple steps for court passing or even cross half court. I mean, anyway.
Anyway.
Where am I? Okay. In virtually every episode of the podcast, writes Steve, I listened to as I caught up, I had laugh-out-loud moments, the last of which was when Steve mentioned Frusenglaja, accents omitted, ice cream. I've used that phrase for my entire life to describe the feeling on a particularly cold day, generally drawing confused looks from those around me, but to hear it mentioned was a delight. Frusenglaja. Made up in a lab, I think, that phrase. Finally, Steve, please accept my sincerest condolences on the loss of your father, Don. Thank you, Steve. I saw his obituary in the paper, and it brought back memories of losing my own father a few years ago. Our condolences, Steve. Through your books, you have always shared with us, the readers, wonderful insights into the Russian family as you grew up, and your father's presence was always there. I was touched by the way he was described in his obituary as longing for the comforting chaos of his full house. It made me think of the line from one of your books, Knights in White Castle, I think, where he described raising a redhead and four meatheads, let's say, for purposes of the podcast. We'll keep it clean.
Okay.
But despite the language, I got the sense that he wouldn't have traded it for the world. It's a tough loss, and my thoughts are with you, Rebecca, your children, and your brothers, their families, and your sister and her family. I'm glad to be back in the fold, and I'll be eagerly awaiting the next episode. Until then, I remain Steve, your attending Northern Suburbs correspondent. Steve, thank you so much for that. I think that exit line in tribute to my dad, the great Don Russian, is a great way to go out before, of course, we are played out by...
By the way, at your father's funeral,
yes,
I, for the first time, met Hari.
Did he introduce himself as Hari?
No, he came over and he said, Rebecca, I'm Harry. And I just looked at him like...
No, you're not. Not excessively.
Right. And he said, from Tom, Dick, and Harry. I said, oh, you're Hari. I don't know if he appreciated that or not, but that's how I think of
him. You don't know if he appreciated your correcting the pronunciation of his own name?
I didn't recognize. It's fine that you're Harry. I don't know who Harry is.
Yes.
But when I realized it was Hari, I finally now have a
probably thought, how many Harrys do you know? Like, do you know as many Harrys as you know Ralphs?
So anyway.
That's very sweet.
Denny Gallagher, thank you very much. Tom, Dick, Hari, play us out.
Saying says no pain, no gain, and we found that to be fact. The road might twist and turn a bit, but we all arrive intact. Mr. Mom and Mrs. Dad having each other's back. Day by day, just to keep it sane. Who's the ball and who's the chain? It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane. Six of us and the family pet live in its cuckoo nest. Daily grind puts sanity to a daily test. And drowsiness ambiguous, what we give for a little rest. Stay by day, just keep it sane. Who's the ball and who's the chain? It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane. It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane. Hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane.